Hello and welcome to Last Week on Earth with Gary. I'm your host, Odessa Primus, and today we'll be chatting with Luís de Almeida Sampaio, Ambassador of Portugal to the Czech Republic. Prior to this posting, he was the permanent representative of Portugal in NATO, ambassador in Berlin, Belgrade, and Algiers. In 2007, he was the Middle East Peace Process Coordinator for the Portuguese Presidency of the European Union. Ambassador Sampaio obtained a law degree from the University of Coimbra. We'll be chatting about the M8 Alliance.
So firstly, what has happened in the last week that has caught your interest?
Oh, in the last week, there were many things, many events, not only here in Prague, but of course, all over the world. And what caught my attention, and I guess caught the attention of a lot of people, was the beginning of the Ukrainian counteroffensive.
Okay, and do you have any reflections on that?
I hope it goes well. There are a lot of stakes involved. It is extremely important that Ukraine regains the integrality of its territory, and that it prevails in a war that was imposed on Ukraine, barbarically imposed on Ukraine, that violated the international rules-based order. And so we all need the success of Ukraine, of the Ukrainian people, of the Ukrainian armed forces, in order to restore the international rules-based order.
Thank you. Since we've started talking about Ukraine, I'll jump straight to one of our questions, which has to do with the M8 Alliance, which I'll ask you to briefly introduce. But with regards to Ukraine, what has been the impact on European healthcare when there is a war, when there is discussions around healthcare and medicine? What changes in the discussions when there is a war like this?
When one of the immediate repercussions of the war in Ukraine was the refugee flow. And refugee flows impact on the population of a given country immediately puts under strain healthcare services and immediately challenges healthcare assumptions. It is obvious that any disruption in the international rules-based order, any disruption in peace creates a totally unforeseen before situation that challenges our assumptions. So it is also the case with the war in Ukraine, the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. Take the example of the Czech Republic. Half a million Ukrainian refugees came to the Czech Republic. The Czech Republic is the European country that received per capita the bulk of the Ukrainian refugees. The vast majority of them are women and children in need, and also in need for healthcare, for health services, placing a strain in the healthcare services across the board in the Czech Republic. And that applies to all the countries in the European Union. So the challenges are, first of all, the adaptation of our health services to this new unforeseen situation. And then, of course, the problems related to global health preoccupations. There are diseases, there are vaccination that is needed, there are special needs for families and individuals that are psychologically affected by the war. So any war, as any disaster, be it a natural disaster or a man-made disaster, has dire consequences on our healthcare system. So we need to adapt. We need to move forward with great intelligence and using all the skills that are available and all the personnel that we could mobilize in order to face the consequences of that.
Thank you. Can you give us an introduction to the M8 Alliance? What is it?
Yes, the M8 Alliance, fortunately, It is something that happened in or started out at a very different international situation, a time when the G8 was still the G8, so Russia was still inside the group of the most developed economies on Earth. It started during a time when in Germany the Chancellor was still Angela Merkel, she hosted a G8 meeting in Heiligendamm in northern Germany. Heiligendamm is a very well-known resort, one of the very first European resorts. And Angela Merkel decided to host in that region that she knows very well, because it was a region of Germany that she really cherished, because it was one of her initial constituencies. She hosted a very important G8 meeting back in 2009. She decided to launch what was called a Medical Aid Alliance, M8. M8 because it was in the context of the G8. And the idea was to try to get together the best medical institutions, medical schools and medical research institutions in the world in order to tackle global health problems. Thus, the name M8 Alliance. It started out, as I say, in Germany upon an initiative by the then German Chancellor Angela Merkel. It is extremely important that governments are mobilized at the highest level. I mean, to tackle in a very serious, long-term, strategic, forward-looking problems of global health needs the involvement and the engagement of politicians, as I underline that, at the highest possible level. It is not a sectoral thing. It is not something that could only be dealt with by ministers or ministries, sectoral responsible for health. It has a lot of implications, financial, technological, political implications. And thus, the initiative of the M8 Alliance was to prompt and to promote at the highest possible political decision level the best institutions on Earth in order to discuss to how to better tackle global health problems. It is something independent from existing organizations, preempt the normal work of the existing organizations like WHO and many other organizations, but it is really an attempt to create a Champions League of medical institutions that together, in sync, in a coordinated manner, reflect on how to best tackle global health problems.
And how did you get involved? What's your connection to healthcare and medicine?
No, that is a very interesting thing. And I think that that is also very telling about Portugal and about Portuguese institutions. So as I said, it started out in Germany in a year that was prior to the financial crisis. The financial crisis of more or less 10 years ago started immediately after that G8 summit that I was mentioning. And the financial crisis created a very difficult situation for countries that were highly indebted, like Portugal, like Greece, like Cyprus, and with repercussions in other European countries like Spain. The Spanish banks were bailed out, Portugal was bailed out, Greece, Cyprus. We were under very strict programs of economic and financial adjustment. And so it happened that I was the ambassador of Portugal in Germany at that time. And one of my main concerns, one of the main aspects of my mandate was to carry on the message to the German institutions that Portugal was a serious partner, totally capable of fulfilling its obligations in face of the international financial institutions. And so in that very difficult context, I tried and succeeded in convincing my German interlocutors, the responsible people for the operationalization of the M8 alliance, that Portugal had the skills, the clusters that could also be valuable participants in the M8 alliance. That was recognized by my interlocutors, not only by the German ones, but also for all the others that were part and parcel of the M8 alliance at that point in time. And we need to understand that we are talking about the best international medical institutions, both hospitals, universities, research and development institutions. So our biggest hospital, the Hospital of Coimbra, and our University of Coimbra, we succeeded in creating a Coimbra Health Consortium that was accepted as a peer within the M8 Alliance. And so from that moment on, from the moment when I was ambassador in Germany, sometime in 2013-2014, Coimbra Health was received within the M8 Alliance as a partner, as a peer, playing a full-fledged role in that context. And I insist that it was extremely important for the international image of Portugal, for the image of Portugal in Germany, in a very dire straits moment for my country, because it was a recognition that even under very difficult financial circumstances, the Portuguese health cluster, the Portuguese health sector, was a valuable partner to help with others tackling global health problems.
And you are currently their chairman of a board, is that right?
Indeed, there is a strategic council, a strategic board of this consortium of Coimbra Health. And I am, since some years ago already, I am the chairman of that strategic board. And it is interesting, and Odessa, and thank you very much for your question that allows me to be a little more detailed in that regard. Coimbra Health is a unique animal in Portugal because it not only represents the biggest hospital in my country, but it also encompasses the university and a cluster of Portuguese companies, biotech, pharmaceutical companies, that are edge innovation related companies in Portugal. They dwell in research about new vaccines, new medicaments, new treatments, because in the region of Portugal, in central Portugal, we have this small Silicon Valley of ours that is really populated by the best and most innovative Portuguese pharmaceutical related businesses. So the hospital, university, first and foremost, the faculties of medical studies and pharmacy, and also this cluster of companies, they compose this Coimbra Health Consortium. The strategic board that I am sharing has the objective of interacting, of related with international players that are relevant for the discussion of our strategies to tackle problems of global health, like the European Commission. We had recently a meeting of our board with Maria Gabriel, one of the most prominent commissioners and responsible for research and development. We had a meeting with the European Investment Bank also recently, and we are engaged in regular meetings with international like-minded institutions. So what I do pro bono is trying to mobilize international interlocutors to discuss with Coimbra Health and the different responsible personalities in Coimbra Health, in the Coimbra Health Consortium, ways and avenues in order to make our contribution to the M8 Alliance even more relevant.
Thank you so much. What is your general relationship with research and innovation and development? Because obviously medicine and healthcare is one of the biggest innovators in the field because it drives so much other innovation and so much can be used in it. And the funding is much higher than in other sectors. Would you be able to give us some examples of what kind of development the M8 Alliance has put out in the last decade, let's say?
The M8 Alliance has a major contribution for the development of innovative vaccines to tackle the last pandemic. So in the context, this is a very concrete example, in the context of COVID-19 pandemic, the institutions that are part and parcel of the M8 Alliance, they have a prominent role in research, in development of treatment, in the development of vaccination, and also in what concerns the awareness, the behavior that we need to adopt in order to face the consequences of pandemics, and also trying to prevent to the best extent possible the spread of pandemic. And as we can see, prompting a huge international debate that bordered in many countries disinformation. And this is again something that the M8 Alliance is very well aware of and trying also to include in the context of its discussions, and we do that in the context of Coimbra Health, the fight against misinformation, the fight against disinformation is key, is essential also as a tool in the context of global health care and global health awareness promotion.
What is the relationship between the M8 Alliance and the World Health Organization?
The relationship is not a functional one. I mean, M8 Alliance hosts every year in Berlin the so-called World Health Summit. So there is every year in autumn time a World Health Summit that takes place in Berlin, because M8 Alliance started out in Germany. The Charité University was not only one of the founders of the M8 Alliance, but also the recipient of the different sequential leadership of the M8 Alliance. So the World Health Summit takes place every year in Berlin, and every 2 years there are regional segments of that World Health Summit. Already one took place in Coimbra, and others of those intercalar regional segments take place in different continents. But the main event is that annual World Health Summit that takes place in Berlin. WHO is invited, all the international key players in what else is concerned are invited. They participate, they are very active. It is a multi-day kind of event that gathers every year the best representatives of the international institutions that work, that dwell in every facet related to health. So not only hospitals, not only universities, but again, private companies, public companies, public-private or private-public partnerships. It is an extremely useful event that allows to reflect on the problems related to global health. And global health is a immense domain that encompasses a lot of dimensions related to health in a broad sense that are not exclusively directly linked with medical care services. So it is an event that everybody is looking at in order to have a guideline, a lighthouse moment that really helps our global strategic thinking on global health related problems.
Is there going to be a central theme this year? What is going to be the most hot topic at the conference?
The topics tend to be the most overarching possible ones in order to allow different specific interventions. But without disclosing anything that is still under wraps, I think that today, again, we will discuss problems related to women health and women's role in global health problems, because it is obvious that in many continents, in many countries, in many quarters of our planet, there are still huge challenges related to women health that need to be addressed. So again, the focus will be very much linked to that. Not only the role of women as health providers, but also the role of women and children and young girls and girls in order to bring those problems to the limelight and to focus our attention in what concerns the problems related to populations or segments of populations that are more fragile than others, especially in certain societies, in many societies where the protection of women, the protection of girls, the protection of young girls, the protection of children is not up to the standards that are already visible in other more developed societies. So it is a permanent challenge, but again, the focus will be very much there. If you allow me, one of the challenges that I took for myself here in the Czech Republic was to sensitize Czech authorities in order to reflect on the potential of Czech medical institutions to bid to join the M8 Alliance. I know how important the M8 Alliance framework and setting is fundamental for Portugal and for the development of not only Coimbra Health, but also other institutions in Portugal that benefit from the Coimbra Health experience inside M8 Alliance. And so I have been trying to convey to the best extent of my abilities the importance of M8 Alliance to my Czech Republic interlocutors. And even putting, availing Coimbra Health as a good partner to join efforts with Czech institutions in order to knock jointly on the door of M8 Alliance. And I think that my message is being well received, is perfectly understood, and I hope that results from that will be known in the near future.
You've said before that the Czech Republic and Portugal actually have a lot in common, and we have very similarly developing economies. Is this something that you have seen as being ambassador currently of Portugal to the Czech Republic, that there are opportunities for synchronization, collaboration, a mutual understanding and endeavors?
Thank you very much. That is a very interesting subject matter. Portugal and the Czech Republic, we are very similar, as you say, more or less the population, the bulk of the population, the overall numbers are very similar, more or less 10.5 million inhabitants each. The overall GDP volume is also relatively similar. Territorially speaking, the dimension of our countries is also very similar. There are differences, obviously, even geographically speaking. The obvious difference is that the Czech Republic is a landlocked country in Central Europe, surrounded by many neighbors. We are in the westernmost tip of Europe. We have a huge Atlantic shore. We have only one neighbor. So there are obvious geographical differences. Economically speaking, even though I am perfectly aware that you are faced with extremely high rates of inflation now, and that there are important and justified economic and financial concerns that also prompted the Czech government to start launching measures in order to face off the consequences of the economic situation. But I always remind my Czech interlocutors, my Czech friends, that you have many sane economic fundamentals. Of course, that you need to preserve. Everybody needs to non-stopping working on those key sane fundamentals. But if you look at the bright side of the picture, you have a relatively low public debt. The public debt in the Czech Republic is not 50% of your GDP. It is 40 something, 48, 45. It depends on the different statistics. It is higher than it was before. There is a trend that preoccupies the financial authorities in the Czech Republic. But if you look at the picture across the board in the European Union and elsewhere, you have a relatively low public debt. And according to what I know, what I hear, what I read from my Czech interlocutors, it is under control. And it will be even more under control if the measures that the government is going to take prove to be successful. Then you have an extremely low rate of unemployment. And that is extraordinary. And you should not only rejoice about that, but also use that as a very important argument, a very important instrument in your international financial related dialogue. So unemployment rate that is more or less 2.5, 2.6% is very good news, especially in face of the refugee flow, of the refugee and migration challenges that we are all faced with. And we know the reasons behind those challenges, not only the war in Ukraine, but also instability and economic deprivation in our vicinity to the south. So all that creates strain in the labor markets across Europe. And the fact of the matter is that the unemployment rate in the Czech Republic is extremely low. Then you have a very high, extremely high, almost record high share of your GDP that comes from export. And this is a demonstration of your industrial basis, of your education system, of the skills of your companies. And you have very close partners. Of course, we all know that those 90% of your GDP that comes from exports, one third of that, more or less, in very rough numbers, is related to what you export to Germany. So the relationship between the Czech Republic and Germany and other economies in Central Europe is very deep, is very dense, is very critical, makes you more dependable, that's true, from events that you are not directly responsible for, that you cannot control. But that is also the beauty of being in Central Europe, having many neighbors, and having many neighbors that are very good partners in commercial, industrial, economic terms. Portugal is a different case. And is a different case, and I could start with economy, of course, but if you look at the Portuguese history, we are not in Central Europe. We are not surrounded by neighbors. We have, as I said, a very important Atlantic shore, and that determined our history, not only in terms of mentality, but also in terms of economy and trade.
For the end, what is your favorite thing about Portugal that you'd like to share, whether it's food or music or anything?
Thank you very much. I think the food is excellent, very different from Czech food, even though I love Czech food and I love Czech traditional cuisine. But sometimes it's not that easy to find in the Czech Republic good, fresh ocean fish, seafood. So I always recommend to my Czech friends, go to small restaurants by the seaside and enjoy fresh seafood, fresh ocean fish. So cuisine, wines, of course, we have plenty of wines. They are magical and they are probably less expensive than wines of other countries, of other important producing countries.
And I believe all the corks of wine are created in Portugal.
Indeed. Cork is also a very important industry. But you know, your question is a very important one. The Czech tourists that go to Portugal, and many of them go to Portugal as an alternative destination to the more traditional Croatia or Greece destinations for the Czech tourists. The Czech tourists that go to Portugal, they are very well known for the fact that they look to visit cultural heritage sites. They visit nature. They try to find hiking trails to profit from. They don't only sit by the beach, by the sand, by the sea. They are curious. They want to understand this country that is in the westernmost tip of Europe.
If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss the next one. Our guests are experts on AI, climate, globalization, the economy, and much more. Learn a little and be entertained. If you want insights into challenges and decisions you and your business are facing, Gary Big Data Analytics are of unmatched complexity and accuracy. Whether your questions are on the green energy and digital transition, trade and supply chains, or political and security related, contact us for a consultation and see how you can optimize your decision making, how you can know what you need to know. This has been Last Week on Earth with Gary. Until next time, have a great day.